Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
I want to move on now because I'm joined by Lily Collison. Good morning, Lily.
Good morning, Brendan.
So, Lily, you are a retired, is one way of putting it, medical microbiologist. You're now an author and an activist, busier than ever. You're also the mother of three sons, and people will know your sons, Patrick and John, who founded the payments firm Stripe, a huge Irish success story. But you don't dine out on that, because we're going to talk about actually your other son, Tommy. And funnily enough, I'd say Patrick and John are used to that all the chat is about Tommy. I know about siblings of special needs kids. But look, Tommy and the path he set you on life really is what we're going to talk about. So will you take me back to when Tommy was born? Did you realise quickly there was something not quite right?
When Tommy was born, so Tommy's our third child, right? And I think by the time you come to your third, you're more relaxed, right? On your third.
Yeah.
And when he was born on a Friday night. And on the Saturday, I asked for him to be checked out because he cried from about Saturday midday, he started crying and he cried incessantly. And that went on for 3 months. But on that Saturday, the day after he was born, I asked for him to be checked out because I wasn't bothered about the crying. It was the pitch of the cry I didn't like.
Okay.
There was something about the pitch of the cry. So I asked, could he be seen by, you know, could that be checked out? And a paediatrician came and saw him and said, no, he's fine. Don't worry at all. So that relaxed me, you know, in the sense that, but actually pitch of cry, there is something in that, you know what I mean? But, and like, I often think probably if you looked up the notes, you know, from that birth, probably it says over anxious mother or whatever.
Yeah.
But there was something in the pitch of the cry that I didn't like.
Trust your instincts.
But,
so when did you get a diagnosis then?
He was, the crying continued for about 3 months and then all settled down. So we all were delighted, you know, he settled down to a very happy child. And that all went along fine till about 6 months. He wasn't meeting his developmental milestones. And like, to be honest, I knew nothing about developmental milestones at that point.
Yeah.
You know, like children just do the things you expect them to do. So he wasn't, and he was termed developmentally delayed, right?
Yeah.
So that went on for a number of months. But developmental delay is not a diagnosis. There's nothing you can really look up about it. So I decided to go to get a second opinion from a paediatrician that I knew was a very straight-talking paediatrician. So I decided to go for a second opinion with him, kind of not really expecting anything. And I remember I had the other two boys with me in the car, and I promised we'd all go to McDonald's afterwards. It was in Limerick. We'd all go to McDonald's afterwards. So I went into the paediatrician. He said, "Do you not know what's wrong with this child?" And I thinking, well, you know, that's what I'm here for. He said, "He has cerebral palsy, straight out, he has cerebral palsy." And the second thing he said was, "And if I want to know how this child will turn out, I don't look at the child, I look at the mother." Right?
Right.
And and actually years later, after the first book came out, you know, I was talking with that paediatrician. He said, gosh, he was apologising. He said, "I was very hard on mothers." And I said, "Not at all." Because, you know, he galvanised me into action. You know what
and
I mean?
What
and
expect-
I appreciated what he said.
Yeah, yeah. I had a bit of straight talk and regret sometimes. Yeah. What expectations, so, were you told to in terms of Tommy's life? Like, was physical disability, presumably?
Yeah,
there a suggestion of being an intellectual disability? Were you told he'd lead an independent life?
I knew nothing about cerebral palsy when I got that diagnosis.
Yeah.
I knew absolutely nothing about it. And like, it's funny, Tommy had a scan quite soon after that. And actually, I was told to go home and mind my other children. Right. And like, Tommy was a year old at this stage.
Yeah.
And you know your children, you know a child. And like the type of cerebral palsy that Tommy has is spastic diplegia. Generally, it affects the legs and walking, right? So it affects gait, it affects walking. But generally, there isn't a cognitive problem with it. You know, people with that type of cerebral palsy, and there's about there's about six main types of cerebral palsy. Tommy has the type spastic diplegia, as I say. Okay. Generally, it doesn't have, it generally affects the walking, but...
presumably you didn't know what
nothing.
You know now then.
Yeah,
okay,
nothing.
So then, you have a balance here of you probably want to know what you need to know. But then in another way, I think you don't want to know too much about worst case scenarios and all that kind of thing. So who gives you the information, the support? Who gives you the rule book like that?
Remember, then? We're back in the 1990s, Brendan.
Yeah.
Like Tommy was born in 1994. No internet around at the time. Like there was very little good information. And even though today we have the internet, there's still the problem of trusted sources of information, even today with the internet. And like, that's why, like, I ended up writing the book I had wanted when Tommy was born.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have been given a roadmap, because, you know, things like I wouldn't have known that epilepsy wasn't common in that type of cerebral palsy. And I had been told to watch out for seizures.
Yeah.
I watched out for seizures for years, and it's not even common in that type of cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
And there was a lot, you know, there was a lot that if I had, you know, I just like good information. Like your child has a disability. There's no getting away from that. But if you've good, solid information, you know, it prevents you worrying about things. You know what I mean? Like Tommy, like, even though I was told to go home and mind my other children, like, Tommy, cognitively, there was no problem. You know, he ended up going, you know, like, he's 30 now. He's a college graduate. He's working in tech in California. He's, you know, he's living a full life. You know what I mean? And, you know, solid information stops a lot of unnecessary worry.
You didn't know that would be a potential outcome back then, did you?
No, but actually what the... when I was told to mind my other child, go home and mind my other children,
yeah,
I put that bit of information in a box in my head, and I never believed it. And it wasn't denial, but I thought, there's a bright child here. I see a bright child here. But I put that in a box in my head and I didn't go there.
And come here, what was family life like then? Does a kid like Tommy take over the family to the detriment of the other two lads?
You try not to, you know, to look after the siblings as well. You know, absolutely you try. But I remember saying to my older sister one day that Tommy and his cerebral palsy, I could actually run through, I could run two families in the time it takes to run one family,
yeah,
and to manage all Tommy's appointments and everything. Because a child with a disability, it comes with a lot of appointments, a lot of medical appointments, a lot of physiotherapy. You know, just there were a lot of appointments. So I always said I could actually run two families,
yeah,
in the time it takes to run one family, you know, as a mother, you know what I mean, and attend all the appointments.
And did he muck along okay with his brothers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. And I suppose we were lucky that, you know, like obviously Tommy in the area of physical, you know, sort of it affected him. Like Tommy would never have been a soccer player or never have been a, you know, that area, you know. But our children weren't great sports people. You know, I didn't raise sports people. They all had interests in computers, which was very handy because the three shared a lot of common interests. Like it would have been harder for me if like our boys went to a very rugby, Castle Troy College was a very rugby in school, secondary school. But we were lucky that the three boys shared a lot of common interests.
And tell me, did you... treat, obviously there are all the medical appointments and everything. Did you treat Tommy differently, like, or did you just wear him the same as the other two?
Same as the other two. Like, I think our role as parents is to help our children reach their potential, whatever that potential is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's my honest belief, that it's helping children reach their potential. Right. And that was my principle with any of the kids. You know what I mean?
So you were just as hard and as easy on Tommy as
hard
as you
and
would
easy.
Have been on the other two.
Probably
yeah.
hard. But anyway.
So tell me about the decision to bring Tommy to, you brought him to Gillette Children's Hospital in Minnesota. And I'll come to the books in a second, but these are the, this is
yeah,
the
yeah,
hospital
yeah.
you do the books with now. You made a decision for him to have, or ye made a decision, a single event, multi-level surgery, 13 procedures in one go. Would that be the norm?
I was very lucky. You know, you never know where life takes you. I was very lucky when we were living in the country. A physiotherapist had come back from Great Ormond Street in London, right, to work in our area. And she had visited Gillette years ago. Now, I'm talking the 1990s. She gave me a book written in 1991 by an orthopaedic surgeon at Gillette Children's. She gave me a book and I read, it was a book written by an orthopaedic surgeon for orthopaedic surgeons. I read that book with a medical dictionary by my side, you know, translating, you know, or explaining a lot of words. And I read that book and I sort of thought, if Tommy ever needs orthopaedic surgery, I'm going to write to him. Because what I learned from that book was just so much common sense in that book as to how they approached orthopaedic surgery. And that surgeon was a world leader in orthopaedic surgery for cerebral palsy. So anyway, the years passed and Tommy, when he was aged about 9, it was determined that he needed orthopaedic surgery. I wrote to that surgeon. He said, bring him over and I'll have a look at him. Brought him over and he said, yes, Tommy needs surgery and this is what he would do. There were two research studies published from that centre that showed the outcome of kids like Tommy after the surgery. And it was very, they were very positive, right?
But and the no, would the norm back then have been a surgery at a time kind
surgery,
of thing?
Yeah, exactly. So he had 13 surgeries at hip, knee and feet level, all in one procedure. And it knocks, like Tommy was walking at this stage, so it knocked out walking and it was a year of intensive rehabilitation. But that was better than having a procedure a year. They used to, that was the way it was done, a procedure a year, rehab, procedure a year, rehab.
Yeah,
and okay. That was called Bertie syndrome, where they'd do the procedures individually. Whereas Dr. Gage, his principle was to correct everything together, do intensive rehabilitation, and the outcomes are much better. And that's, you know...
And like, you see, what comes across all the time here is that you had the education and you had that go to you to find out all this stuff and everything. And you know well that a lot of parents and a lot of mothers haven't the education or the time or whatever to start understanding this world. So I suppose that's then the books. There are 6 of them published now and 3 more to come.
Yeah.
And they're basically, as you said earlier, they're kind of the handbook.
Well, like when Tommy was gone to college and I had retired and Tommy was age 25 at that stage, right? And I decided to go back and write the book I had wanted when Tommy was first diagnosed, right? I decided to just go back and write that book, right? And like I wrote no market research. I wrote based on a sample size of 1, the book I had wanted. And like when that, so I, and I approached Gillette Children's, that hospital in the States, and I said, look, if I do the research and write the book, will you edit it? Which they agreed to, right? And we wrote and we published that book. And no one was more surprised than I that it sold really well around the world, right? Nobody was more surprised than I when it was read as much by families as it was by medical professionals. Like one orthopaedic surgeon here says, your book is the first book I tell new people on service to read, you know, that book.
Yeah.
And then no one is more surprised than I when requests start coming in for translations. Like that book is now available in Chinese. So it struck me, why don't we make the book into a series? Because spastic diplegia was only one type of disability, right?
Yeah.
What about all the other types of disability? Like if that book on spastic diplegia, you know, hit a chord or struck a chord, right? What about all the other disabilities? So I went back to the hospital and I said, look, why don't you make this book into a series? And they said, okay, if you come to work for the hospital. So back in 2022,
back out of retirement. Tommy Raird.
I went back to work in the hospital because I suppose I really believe in, education is knowledge is power.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you, it's enough to have, you know, for a child to have a condition without, like I was really held back by not understanding the condition. And like a lot of these conditions are complex conditions. Like cerebral palsy is complex because it changes as the child grows, right? And you know, I sort of thought, like, at least if we're not held back by understanding of the condition, there's still a lot more needed. But yeah. I just thought, let's make a series. So, as I say,
Lily, if a mother in a similar situation, do you know, her father is listening and they're thinking, God, that woman's fantastic, but I'm struggling here. I can't cope. Obviously, the book, your books are available in for certain conditions and everything. What's the one piece of advice you'd give to someone who's at the start of this journey?
Feel no guilt. You know, lot of times,
Did you have a lot of guilt?
Feel no guilt. You know what I mean?
What, that it was your fault that you weren't doing enough?
Yeah. Like, you know, as a parent, what did I do wrong? Gosh, I worked too hard when I was pregnant. You know, I felt guilt. You know what I mean? I worked too hard. Maybe I was too stressed or whatever. You know, just, you are where you are, go forward.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
You are where you are, go forward. And feel no guilt.
Feel no guilt.
Okay. And Lily, the 6 books are available in print and in ebook format, and people can get them in Hodges Figgis, and they can get them in Amazon as well. And also, I think for people dealing with cerebral palsy in the family, the Cerebral Palsy Programme of Excellence, which you're also very involved in, which we don't have time to talk about, maybe talk about another day, is there doing fantastic work as well. Lily Collison, thank you so much.
Thank you. And Brenda, could I just add that all the proceeds from the books go to research.
Okay, fantastic. Fantastic. Thanks, Lily.
Thank you, Brendan.